I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard, and I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Go ahead, break it down. Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
The Secret of Monkey Island, a game so big only the Sega CD could hold it. You are Guybrush Threepwood, would-be pirate. Something's afoot on these islands, and it's up to you to find out what's what. A graphic adventure game has never been so easy. Using the award-winning Scum system, walking, talking, taking is as simple as pointing the cursor and pressing a button. The Secret of Monkey Island offers adventure gamers a new kind of storytelling experience that includes logic puzzles, complex conversations, and side-splitting humor. Available now from LucasArts Games and JVC, The Secret of Monkey Island sets new standards for Sega Genesis CD games.
Oh, my Lord. Didn't
it's
know it was on
easy.
There. Everyone, welcome to Play Retro, where we talk about old video games. I'm your host, Scott Johnson, and I like to click on pirates and their booty.
Ooh, and I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and yo ho, these Sierra games keep killing me. So I'm loading up four discs worth of sarcastic point and click adventuring instead. Also, Lucas is a troll.
Yeah, Lucas is a troll. George Lucas
is a troll.
Permanent troll of all time. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the show. We got a lot to talk about. Been a busy week for everybody. A lot going on. But we have been deep in discussion and planning to talk to you fine folks about those Monkey Island games of yore. The old ones. The classics. Ooh. Why are we doing that? Well, partly a brand new edition of the game, or addition to the game, came out last week. And that game is getting stellar reviews and seems like a real return to the source material, as well as an advancement many other ways. So I'm excited to play that game. I bought it. It's in my library. I just need to click play. But in the meantime, we played all this other stuff, so we could talk about it today.
Yeah, so all the stuff leading up, that stuff during mostly the 90s. We creeped a little bit into the 2000, but we're not going to talk about the Tall Tale games other than just to say those existed.
Yeah, nothing wrong with Telltale. I like the Telltale games fine. They were okay.
Telltale games.
For their time. You say Tall Tale? I like that.
Yeah, I said Tall Tale. I did, because I don't know why I got confused there. But yes, Telltale.
Telltale. I actually like Tall Tale better. That's better.
Yeah. This is at least as good.
Yeah, it's as good or better. Anyway, yeah, we're not going to talk about those so much because they're not really in the classic pantheon, but there are a lot of games that are. And you're going to hear Ron Gilbert's name come up a lot. You're going to hear Tim Schafer's name a lot. These are some of the luminaries of the greatest adventure games ever made. And thankfully, Ron Gilbert is the dude behind the new one. We'll get to all that here in a minute. But before we do, I am a very bad retro player this week. You know why? Let me tell you why. Okay. I spent almost entirely my game time, with the exception of today, I played a bunch of Grounded, which is also a new game because it hit 1.0 today and is very, very good. Highly recommend it. I spent all my time in Cyberpunk during the last week, with what gaming time I had, which wasn't actually that much. I played a ton of Cyberpunk. So I guess you could say I played a retro game in 30 years. This will be a retro game. Okay.
Right.
So that's how
Scott's working the loopholes.
Yeah, I'm working the loophole. I like those holes, like to work them, and I'm working one today. So, yeah, there you go. I spent all of my time
Cyberpunk. Is there any cyberpunk retroing inside the game? Is there any, like, unlockable games or stuff like that?
Funny you should ask. There 100% is. You go into these various places that have arcade machines. They're, like, kind of old, new looking. Like, it's hard to explain. So the cyberpunk motif is very much like if the 80s and extreme technology existed at the exact same time. That's kind of cyberpunk.
Right.
And that's when that tabletop system was written in, so it makes sense. But anyway, the there's a game in there called... Oh, come on, chat. You're going to have to remind me. It's the horse one. But it's a pixelated, retro-looking, like endless runner game where you're a horse.
Okay.
And you got to jump over obstacles, avoid other one, avoid certain things, try not to get killed. The longer you hold the button, the higher you jump. Is it called Pixel Horse? It might be.
I love all the options, though. Horse game, says Claire Gack. Yeah. Always got a good one.
Yeah, yeah. Last of Us. Choplifter.
Choplifter, always a favorite amongst the we have to start charging channel points to be able to use the word choplifter.
I think that's a good idea. But I will say, if it is Pixel Horse, let me see if it is. I can't remember the name. Oh, yeah, it is Pixel Horse.
Right.
It is... actually really fun. I mean, I'm not spending a ton of time on it, but when I see an arcade or I have to go do a quest and it's inside a place that has pachinko machines and arcade machines and stuff, I'll stop off at the Pixel Horse and play it. It's good.
Yeah. And could you even have Cyberpunk without like games like System Shock and Deus Ex?
Oh, no. You don't have any of that stuff without the Cyberpunk motif. And, you know, Blade Runner deserves a lot of credit for that. And, you know, do Cows Dream of Electric Pigs or whatever the name of the book
was. It's the cows. He makes a little paper mache cow and he puts it right there on the table. There he does.
Exactly. So that's what I did. It's a retro future world, and that's a little bit okay for this show. Brian, you did a lot more stuff, including I guess your Steam Deck's here on Wednesday. Yeah.
I was going to be there Wednesday or Thursday. We're still waiting, but it should be here very shortly. I'm very excited the Steam Deck is going to finally arrive. Thank God. I thought I was going to be here last week, but that was just a tease. And so they finally did ship it out sometime this week. And then they sent me a notification and said, and so I'm looking forward to it. I can't wait because I'm going to be just as annoying as you were.
You are going to be. You're going to annoy everybody except me because I'm excited for you. I can't wait for you to get it.
Right.
I have a whole list. Oh, by the way, I don't think I've told the show this. I've told other shows this, but I have a whole list of, including a bunch of retro games, including the entire retro, like how to get EMU deck running and all that, plus a ton of modern games and a big giant list of games that I've tested on the device that I know A, work, and B, are really fun. And it's a big list. If you go to frogpants.com/deckgames, D-E-C-K games, again, that's frogpants.com/deckgames, you'll see my entire list, and I update it all the time. Brian, you'd be happy to know that I was playing Owlboy the other day. That game is fantastic on there.
If you love retro games, not a true retro game, but got in the spirit of one, Owlboy is amazing.
Owlboy is amazing. If you didn't play it back in 2017 or whatever it was when it came out, you are missing out on one of the best, most beautifully animated pixel adventures I've ever seen.
So good.
And they somehow transcend the Metroidvania bit with gameplay that's unlike any Metroidvania you've played, but it's still kind of a Metroidvania. It's really, really good. And I've been playing that plus a bunch of other stuff. That device is great. You're going to lose your mind. I can't wait for you to get it. Let me know when you get
it. I can't wait. But what I do have, though, I got some really old retro equipment sent to me by a couple of listeners, actually, a couple of people in our community. Albert Mayor McCheese on Twitter sent me some Commodore stuff. This is the, don't know if you remember this, 1541 large floppy disk that I used to have with my Commodore. Look at that thing.
Jeez.
Look how big. This thing's bigger than my head.
That's as big. It's a little longer, but it's like basically your Series X, but mushed in a different direction.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And he sent me a Commodore 64. It looks like it needs a little bit of work. There's a couple of keys, but that's fine. I'm down with that. I'm down with a couple of little projects. The Play Retro Preservation Society does exist. Yep. If you want a little smaller floppy drive for the 128, the Commodore 128, which I've never had, much more reasonable in size. And he also sent me a 128 that I've got to get some cables for. So I'm pretty excited about that. But also another great Jamie is in the process of hooking me up with a fully working Commodore 64 to bring back my childhood. Yeah. Man.
Could you get your Commodores on more often than right now? Your Commodore life is about to just explode.
Really is. And the more we play these retro games, like, got me even more excited because with Monkey Island this week, Ron Gilbert talks a lot about getting started with Scum on the Commodore 64.
Yep.
And so that was written originally. He was working in assembler language. And so then he built all these tools for the Scum game engine, and it propagated and it went on forward. And I've been reading like the user manual, the Bible or cookbook, if you will, of the original Scum that they had for the developers. And so all of this is really getting me super excited.
Have you had any desire to go and play with the latest iteration? Because there's like a version of Scum that people still build new games with and stuff. Do you have any interest in messing with that?
I actually want to try some of this after I get through reading the manual. I wouldn't mind trying compiling my own. There's a couple places where you can compile a Scum game of sorts. I'm not sure how complete it is. I'm still learning and researching it. But I'm pretty excited about that. I would love to do something similar to developing a small, because you know that's what you did back then. You had small teams, an individual could potentially design their own game, so I'm pretty excited about it. Albert and Jamie both, I want to thank both of those guys for hooking me up with and helping us grow this Play Retro Preservation Society. And just a couple got some stuff I gotta work on to get these things fully functional. But I'm excited about having the opportunity to do just that also. A little follow-up real quick. I don't know if you see that Twitter link down there. A follow-up from last week. We was talking about the storage situation I have here behind me. You know, how we display and store our retro equipment. And we had at least one individual who posted a really awesome picture on Twitter. Look at that.
That's great.
Look at all of that stuff, man.
That's pretty great. I want that just because it looks like a corner of a store. Like I'm going to an old software, et cetera, and they got a rad little retro section or something.
Yeah. So they just used a wire rack, and they've got mostly handheld stuff. You'll see some, I see some Game Boy games over there. Looks like it might be an NES Mini up there. Is that with the controllers and stuff? Or maybe it's just a box, but look at all those small handhelds down there.
Got a bunch of those. So got a pair of shoes that say Game Over on the soles.
Oh,
he's got,
yes.
He's got a Switch up there, a Switch box. I don't know if there's a Switch in it. He's got some, what's that, a 3DS or 2DS or something right there.
Yes.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah, share us your setups. Let us see it on Twitter, Play Retro Show, or send them to the email either way.
Yeah, send them, what is our email? PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. Send that to
there
us.
There you go. That's it.
Please do. And Play Retro Show on Twitter. Very cool. And also, there's something about this name of the Play Retro Preservation Society. We got to do something with that. I don't know what.
Oh, yes.
We should come up with something like a not-for-profit sort of thing where people, if they've got some old thing they want to donate to the cause, we'll create a little like a museum of sorts and send it around where it makes sense. And that includes one of you. If you're like, look, I've got a complete set of every EA game that came out on the Genesis with all the weird little tabs on the cartridge, but I'm missing one, and it's, Mutant League Hockey. And then somebody out there is like, oh, I've got like two copies of that. Here, I'll send you that one. Like an exchange kind of system would be so cool. We got to talk about this. It'd be something we could do.
Yeah, I'm totally down with that. And like I said, everybody who sends me something, I keep their information with the equipment. And eventually I like to make some little plaques and stuff. And if ever I would like my ideal vision is to have all this stuff kind of somewhat portable so that like if we go to an East Coast meetup like we tried to this past year, I wouldn't mind like, you know, bringing some stuff up and setting it up and you know.
Sure.
Giving everybody a chance to take a look and play with that original hardware and stuff. So just working on it. It's still early on, but it excites me.
Ideas.
It gives me the tingles.
Yeah. And for those, by the way, that wonder what Scum is, basically it's an engine to build, and it's very old. Goes back to the C64, as Brian mentioned, but it's two M's, S-C-U-M-M. It's an acronym for something. Hold on. What is it?
Yeah. It's a script creation utility for Maniac Mansion.
That's right.
Ron Gilbert, he originally made this because it was becoming difficult to develop for the game because of having to assemble stuff constantly. Mm-hmm. And so this is just a layer that allows it to manage all the memory and everything and all the programmer has to do is concentrate on the game designer. All right. I do is concentrate on just like the fun parts, like, you know, scripting stuff so that it'll look like you could do these adventure games, mm-hmm. and you could point to the graphics, and it just makes everything a lot easier and a lot better.
Yeah. And like I said, you can run this now. So it was Ron Gilbert with the help from Chip Morningstar. He went by the name Unix Man in 1987. Anyway, pretty cool stuff. We'll talk about that more later, but it's pretty rad. Love it.
Pretty cool, dude.
Yeah. You should, dude, learn some Scum. Do it. Let's do it.
I am. Like I said, I've been learning the scripting language. It's pretty, it's not too bad. Scum actually ended up turning into using the Lua, L-U-A, mm-hmm. which is also another scripting language. And I kind of know a little bit of that. They're not like one-to-one or anything, but I've been playing around long enough with all this stuff that most of it makes sense to me.
My daughter bought something called, I don't remember the name of it, and she's not in the chat, so I can't ask her. But she's trying to build her own adventure game, do some of the art for it and stuff, and she bought something for like $84 that is supposed to be the hot business right now. It's not Scum, it's some other thing, but I guess people are making some amazing games out of it. She just kind of wants to get a game demo made so she can, you know, slap that with her diploma and, you know, put this in resumes and stuff.
Yeah. You don't have to start from scratch. I mean, we are at a place that we don't have to write our own game and just thank God. You can, but you don't have to.
No, you don't have to. You don't have to do anything.
You can do the more fun parts.
But you do have to listen to this.
Shall we play a game?
Speaking of episode one, there's a little joust sound there. We're talking about Monkey Island Retro Edition here. The Secret of Monkey Island, Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge, and The Curse of Monkey Island, and Escape from Monkey Island. There's some other stuff in there. Like, we had a commercial at the top of the show that talked about the Sega CD version of the original game.
Yes.
But, you know, we're not really focused on, you know, ports and all that today. We're just really talking about these original adventure games, which is interesting because some may say, hey, haven't you guys done the adventure game thing before? Well, we talked about King's Quest, but that's a whole different jam.
We did the opposite of what we're doing today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Also, King's Quest was like, my gosh, we had a lot with that episode, didn't we? There was a lot.
Yeah. We're talking about King's Quest as more of a text parser. This was intentionally designed to be the opposite of that. That's what Ron Gilbert really wanted to do. That was his whole idea to start, to go, no, I don't want to make it where somebody can die like constantly and I want something this easy. Matter of fact, they talked about it in the commercial. They said it's kind of, what they say, easy or less complicated. I don't remember the exact
words, and really what they meant was it's very point and click. This was a mouse era thing, you know, that was where they were focused. Mice relatively, 1990, relatively new. And the DOS version is the one I saw. I forgot how little audio there is in these games, though. That kind of threw me. There's mostly music.
Sparse.
And then not a lot of sound effects and no voice acting in the original stuff.
Right.
But as you're looking right now, I'm showing some footage of a playthrough. I actually think the animation and graphic style holds up. I think this looks freaking great. Even that talking pirate looks great talking. Look at him. Talking. It's amazing. And it was all with this really great MIDI music that sounded like this. I mean, tell me that doesn't make you want to just like groove to it, man.
I let this run in the background for hours. Because you're not going to die here. You can have Threep Wood hang out and just sit in a room and nothing happens. It's fine. There's only one way to die in this game.
Yep.
And I'm not going to tell it to you.
No, you shouldn't tell us. It's a secret. It's the secret of Monkey Island, right?
It is a secret of Monkey Island. No, it's a secret of how Threep Wood can die. If you have to really mean it, though.
Yeah.
It's not easy to do.
That's true.
Make it happen.
Well, the game was known for being funny. And that commercial kind of said it pretty well, although it was a super cheesy way to present a commercial or a game. But, you know.
Yeah, it was kind of lackluster, wasn't it? I was kind of like, ooh.
Yeah, it's like this guy.
I don't even want to play that game. Yeah, oh.
Kind of lame ad. But the game itself, very funny, somewhat heartening in parts. I've heard this about the new game a lot, that there is, the same focus on humor is there and all that other stuff, but that it's actually really heartfelt by the end. And people who are longtime fans of the series are going to really like what Ron Gilbert did in 2022. But anyway, of course, we mentioned this is on the Scum Engine. Amiga, DOS, Atari ST, and Mac is where this showed up the first time. Did you play the original game? And where did you?
I did not play it on the first run. And the reason why is because this would have been on Windows 3.11. So, you know, real old school. And when I was on 3.11, I was doing a little bit of BBS stuff, but I wasn't playing any video games on the PC. All my video gaming was being done on consoles. It wasn't until Windows 95 that I started loading up some DOS games. And one of the first games I loaded up was The Secret of Monkey Island, which was a little bit older by that point. It's around 95 or so.
Yeah.
So I got 95 pretty early on. I was stoked.
You were early.
I was like, oh, this is going to change everything.
That's pretty funny, though. Yeah. You started playing more DOS games when DOS became not the operating system that...
Yeah, yeah. Well, that wasn't really... It was because... It just happened. You know, people had been, I had been acquiring games. People had been giving me games. My whole life, people know I've been a gamer. And so I would be given games like, oh, here's some disc of this. You ever use it? I'm like, I'm not going to play this. Thank you. Anyway,
Yeah.
So I had it. It was one of those games that was sitting around. It's like, oh, you know what? I think I will play this. And it's like, oh, it's runs in DOS. Okay, whatever. I'm playing some games with this thing now. So might as well go for it. Go for it.
Yep. That's true. By the way, so. Look at the names involved in this game. You've got Secret of Monkey Island.
Yes.
And you've got, as we mentioned, Ron Gilbert's kind of your head of the table here. But Tim Schafer is there doing programming work. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He would go on to be the Tim Schafer, one of the most important names in all video games, not just adventure games. You had people like, where'd the other guy's name go?
There's so many people involved with the Secret of Monkey Island. A lot of great illustrators and artists as well.
Yeah,
all on at Skywalker Ranch. This was a time when LucasArts was still at the ranch.
Yep, still at the ranch. Skywalker Ranch. Still a very much a solely owned George Lucas joint. And I think it showed that kind of creativity that was going on at ILM and Skywalker Ranch, and you know all their little subsidiaries. They were all still feeding off the massive teat that was Star Wars and and had no problem cutting some edges here. Like this is new. This game, new at the time in 1990, I think looks great today. Like if you were going to make, if you told me, hey, Scott, there's a brand new pixelated Scum Engine like point and click adventure game coming out and you showed me this, I'd believe you. I'd say, oh, that looks cool. I'm ready to play. Let's go. Like it looks great.
Sign me up, man.
Yeah, and this is 256 colors they're working with here, which is nothing.
Yeah, I was actually trying to see if this is the 256 version. The original version that came out was only EGA, which was 16 colors. They very quickly went to VGA, which is a 256.
Yeah, this is the VGA one because it's got those cutscenes with the crazy detailed faces and stuff. And it was also, so this long play that we're looking at right now was played on PC DOS on a Roland MT-32.
Ooh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So the real deal there, it is widescreen, which threw me. I don't know why that is. Don't think it was originally widescreen. So maybe that's...
It's not widescreen. It does look like it's widescreen. It's actually 4x3, but this is probably something I had completely forgotten about. You forget that the top part is like almost split. It's not quite half and half, but the top part is where the action, the movie is playing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then below it is where you do all your selections for your verb selections mm-hmm. and your inventory. So it does look like if you look at the whole screen, because the bottom part is blacked out, so it makes it look like it's letterbox, but actually there's content going down there and it's in the whole screen itself.
It's
is
weird though, because I don't know if they're chopping it, but even when I've got text up, let me go back and I can look at it normal here with some text. There we go. I look at that.
If I go edge to
edge. Yeah. If I go edge to edge, there's 16x9 on here. So I don't know if they converted it. They did it real time.
Yeah, they might have.
That's no true. Idea. Hard to say.
It might be stretched. I can't quite tell. I'm looking too. But yeah, it originally was a 4x3 format. Yeah. And you're not going to stretch it because it's pixel art, right? So it's not like it's not like it can be stretched, even though they might have.
That's true. This took 1.44 floppies, by the way.
Yes.
So if you wanted to buy this game, that's how you bought it. It wasn't on CD till later. And there's your deal. That's your game.
And you had to switch those floppies too, baby. I was reading how Scum works and talking about where they have the assets and that kind of stuff. And you would have to flip out the floppies if it's in certain cases. You know, you may have a resource that would be on a floppy. Mm-hmm. They tried to encourage the programming to keep it to where you would keep as much together as you could, but occasionally you would do something that would require you to flip between the floppies. So yep. A lot of fun.
Yep. The game had no voices until 2009, some 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. So yeah, 2009 was when the special edition came out. Have you ever played the special edition?
I didn't play it. I know it has a bunch of people like the voice work in it, but I've never heard it or seen it. So I'm sure.
I would say that the special, if you're playing today for the first time, I went to archive.org, grabbed the original DOS files and played it in DOSBox. And then I also tried it out in ScumVM just to see what the differences were. It worked well in both cases, ScumVM being the superior experience with this. But then I also purchased the Steam version of the special edition of The Secret of Monkey Island. And if I was doing it today, I would definitely go that route. I think it's $6.99 or something like that. And it is amazing because it's got a cell animation looking graphics, but you can toggle in game while you're playing.
Yeah,
you can toggle to classic mode. It will literally, it'll seamlessly kind of just, it'll just zoom in to the old pixel art.
If you played Diablo 2 Resurrected last year, that's what we're talking about here. Same thing.
Switch page up, page down, I believe is the shortcut key. Yeah. And it'll flip back and forth between the two. There's music throughout, in this version. No dialogue still.
Well, I thought it had audio, didn't it? Hold on.
Or maybe it does.
Let me see.
None shall pass.
Oh yeah, it does.
I apologize.
Here it is.
It has it in the remastered part. So if you flip back to the pixel art,
yeah,
it loses the voice acting.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because you're trying to keep it.
But not in part two. In part two in Chuck's Revenge, you can do both. There is a mod that will allow you to have all the voice dialogues as well as the original artwork. And that's the way I preferred to play it when I was playing this. This artwork doesn't stand up as well to me.
No, I agree. I actually think that this is fine. It's fine. Okay, yeah. But it's not as cool as the pixel stuff. Because here's what I think. I think in 2009, we weren't sure if it was like... part of the remaster should be things like eliminate the original pixelated art and replace it with this stuff. We thought maybe that was the right thing to do. I think if you were making this remake today, you would work really hard to maybe add more pixels or more effects or whatever, and definitely voice work and other environmental stuff. But I think you would want to retain that pixel art, because all this much time later, I think pixel art has become accepted, for me anyway, as not just what it used to be like, but also a perfectly wonderful form of presentation even today. Like, I really like awesome pixel art, even if it's brand new. I don't care. I like it.
And one of the reasons I think as well is because they hired illustrators who did the pixel art in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And those guys were literally, I've listened to a lot of interviews, by the way. I didn't know this until this past week. But these illustrators... They were learning how to use pixel art because there was nothing there before. They were making up shit. And so when they had just the 16 colors, they had to use dithering. And at first, the Scum Engine couldn't compress dithering. And if you know anything about compression, you know it's a lot easier to compress something that's got solid blocks versus a bunch of dithering, because it just gets complicated.
Yeah.
And so at first, they weren't going to allow them to do the dithering stuff. But man, the care and attention, because they had to translate this from, you know, classic art to pixel art was really big. Whereas the 2009 one looked more like almost like flash animation or something, you know, real basic illustration stuff that you could kick out in a pretty short amount of time. Mm-hmm. Whereas the pixel art, whoo boy, that was done in Deluxe Paint or whatever.
Oh, back in the day, they didn't even have, you got to remember this, like this is especially true of stuff just prior to this, especially because they were pioneering a lot of new ways to do this at LucasArts. But back in the day, nobody sat down with a big fat tablet and a pen and drew pixel art. That's not how they did it. They had to sit down and do it sometimes mathematically, 100% code-based art. And so you're just sitting around going, all right, well, this far in the y-axis, this far in the x-axis, and that's where this one pixel is. We're going to make it blue, and now I'm going to make a red pixel right next to it. And it's going to be... Like, that's how they used to do this shit. And this is so different now. So much different.
And that's why Ron Gilbert was so important, especially the Scum Engines, because he made it possible for a creative artist to take control of making games without having to have deep programming knowledge. They just had to have a little bit of scripting knowledge, which reads a lot more like human language than what you would have to deal with otherwise. So yeah, it was really important that we were bringing this all these great artists in on something. It's a real
totally
masterpiece.
Agree. I agree. And also, just as you know, this is as important or maybe more important, but the game felt like the right length. It felt like the right difficulty. Mm-hmm. It is a very, very good video game. Take away all the graphical, technical leaps of the time, and there were some, but take that all away, and underneath it all is a very, very smartly written, funny. Great game. And I think that's really hard to do today. You want to make an adventure game today? Freaking good luck. This stuff is freaking hard. It's hard.
Yeah, like I'm not gonna talk bad about Sierra Games, but there has to be a comparison here, because what Sierra was doing was almost the opposite of what was happening here. Mm. And so this had such a, like I said, it was such a, it was so much more on the creative side, allowing them to write this witty dialogue. They got to put a lot of the technical things behind them so they could focus on making something that was humorous throughout and just told this story. And it was that made you feel like you didn't have any. Ron talks about this. Ron Gilbert talks about this in a couple of interviews. Yeah. He's talking about the player being here. They're not pirates. They're novice pirates. And the character that we're controlling is a novice pirate. Yeah. And so instead of being an expert at something, and trying to, you know, manage somebody as an expert at something, here we are. We're naturally moving forward into this storytelling, and I think this really works well.
Yep, I agree. It was really something in its day. Now we move on to this. Well, if you're wondering what that is, it's the sequel.
There was a sequel.
There was a sequel, and it was called The Secret of Monkey Island. Not The Secret of Monkey Island. Monkey Island 2.
Monkey Island.
LeChuck's Revenge, which in French means The Chuck's Revenge. This is just one year later, but this was a massive, massive upgrade in graphics fidelity. At least at the very least, one of the things that I absolutely loved about it were the intro animation stuff. It is so good. Let me find that here in our video preview, because this stuff, I can't find it.
And if you're not familiar with what was going on, why LeChuck is our in the title of our game, is because Threepwood has defeated the ghost LeChuck, and LeChuck is back. Spoiler: this time he's a zombie. Think to some voodoo action. I'm not talking about the video card either. I'm talking about the old voodoo that you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the voodoo you do. Mm-hmm. I get it. The chat room saying they really like the dancing monkeys in the intro. That is true. In fact, they're coming right up here. There was a weird... let me pause it here, actually, because they had a weird security code at the beginning. So basically, for those at home on audio, I'll try to explain this. It says, press enter to begin lame-o copy protection. And then up top, they have a bunch of... Think of it as like almost like a slot machine. They have images flashing above that text. When you hit spacebar, the two images will be chosen, right? So boink, it slows down, bam. So what they've chosen here is, I guess that's a toadstool and a jaw?
Jaw of a shark or something like
jaw
that,
bone?
Maybe?
Yeah. So it says, recipe for scurvy. They're even having fun with this. This says, mix blank deadly toadstools with blank shark lips and shake well. So then you put in these numbers. In this case, you put 8 and 15. Now, see, I don't know how it worked, though. Something in the book, maybe? No. The manual?
So, yeah. I think the first one had, like, a wheel. So the copy protection on that was, like a decoder wheel.
Yeah.
Where you had, like, pirate faces, and you could spin it around, and once you spun it around, like the little window would reveal what the password is. I think this one was more manual focused. I think this one was the manual. And you start off here, you're the the Governor Elaine, the real hero of the Monkey Island series, Elaine. And then you're the wannabe hero who's always kind of screwed stuff up.
Yeah, she's Elaine. You're Jerry. You got to find George. yeah, all works out.
You're Guybrush. You're not the Seinfeld. You're Guybrush.
Yeah, you're Guybrush. You're the brush of the guy. See, this one's 4x3, so I don't know why that other one wasn't. But anyway, LeChuck's Revenge is the game I saw the most of and played the least of. I know that's a weird thing to say, but my friend had it and loved it and wouldn't stop playing it and never gave up on it. And I watched him play a ton of it at where I worked at the time. This is right around the time I got a job for a computer company. And at night we would play video games. And there was a huge stretch of time where he would just sit there and play Monkey Island 2. And I would sit and watch him. So my experience with this game is limited in terms of actual play. I do remember loving what I watched, though. And really, that's all you can ask for in this day and age.
Yeah, I was... When this came out, I did not play much of this either. This is also 91. You would have still been on 3.11 DOS, you know, and Windows 3.11. So you wouldn't have Windows 95 yet.
No.
Unless you played this on the Amiga, which all of these games look better on the Amiga. It always did.
The Amiga was a better looking version of all of this content.
Yeah.
All of Ron Gilbert's work has ever looked better on an Amiga until Amigas went away. And then graphic fidelity caught up everywhere else. But yeah, the Amiga was freaking awesome. Real quick here, this had more sound effects, more music, no voice acting though.
Still no voice acting. We did get an addition to the Scum. It now interfaced with a system called iMuse, which the reason why you hear more music in this one is because you have a system that allows you to handle more assets with the music, and it loads it up more like all the other assets. Yeah, it was just a little bit better.
Yeah, I agree. So Chet says, Scott, you were the original Twitch. Yeah, that was me sitting there in that office staring
watching
at this
somebody.
Thing. Yeah. Yep. I gave him a sub while he was there. Some bits. I threw some bits at him, whatever those were.
Here's 100 bits.
Yeah, here's 100 bits. What does that mean? It's like crumbs for my cookie. That's where my bits were then. Anyway, this game is cool, but I remember being bummed at the time that they didn't do any voice stuff on it. And even though it was a huge critical success, this thing sold like dog. It did not do well.
Yeah, it didn't do well. But it did give us a little bit better Scum. So they each time they did one of these games, they would, and other games as well, they would make improvements to the Scum engine. And this one, now the inventory has graphical icons instead of just text, instead of just words.
Mm-hmm. Yep, which is great. So they dedicate the right side over there to that stuff. I mean, having played one of Ron Gilbert's most recent games called Thimbleweed Park, an amazing little indie title he put together not long ago. It's only been a few years. That's a wonderful game, by the way. People should play it. If you want you want an injection of like Ron Gilbert, but with a modern sort of sensibility, it's so good. Oh my gosh. Thimbleweed Park is amazing. It's basically X-Files. It's a big X-Files ripoff. You know, like where this is making fun of pirate culture, that thing made fun of, you know, so there's basically a Mulder and Scully type character, and it's all like stupid tropes from that era of television or whatever. Everything's a weird mysterious ghost or a FBI conspiracy or whatever, and it's great. Highly recommend playing that if you have never played it. But two was a commercial disappointment. It didn't matter. Fans who loved it. And
well, unlike good. the first one had like sword play, but you wouldn't do like real-time sword play. Instead, you would choose insults, dialogue insults, right? And that's how you would determine how well you were doing rock, paper, scissors style, how well you were doing, how well your character would sword play, right?
Yep.
So do you remember the insults? Like, there's one insult that I remember from the first one.
What do you got?
It was like, you fight like a dairy farmer. And then I think the comeback was like, how appropriate, you fight like a cow.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, there's your humor. In the second one, I think it was still humorous, but it felt a little more forced. It was like, it felt a little more forced to me.
Yeah.
And
I think that's hard to duplicate, because I think the first one may have been sort of loose and free. In the second one, there's expectations now, you know?
Yeah. You've got to, like in the first one, you kind of had what you imagined is the end product. Here, I think you kind of had a new, you kind of knew what you were going to have the end product in. You kind of forced things a little bit.
It's also I think it's hard on Ron Gilbert too, because he has been, he's known for this like brilliant stuff. And every time he does something new, scrutiny is on full alert for, and I don't think it's fair. I think it's really unfair that he gets that level of scrutiny. And his best work are the ones with the least amount of scrutiny. Thimbleweed Park, good example. I think it's some of his best humor since the original Monkey Island. But there are other games that had a huge hype around them, like Deathspank, which I really enjoyed Deathspank. Yes. It's like a kind of a Diablo send-up thing they did for PS3, 360 era. Amazing game, but the humor fell flat for me and a lot of other people, I think. I think the expectations are too high, and it stilted the writing. So he's best when he doesn't have those filters of either corporate or money or any of that bullshit. He just wants to sit down, make an amazing game, laugh at himself. That's his best work. You know, and this sequel's okay. It's good. There's nothing wrong.
It's good. You know, yeah. It's actually. I kind of listed all these in which one's my favorite, second, third, and fourth. And I actually put, because you got to remember, when I say favorite, it means at this point in time, the one that fulfills the most in me is Monkey Island 2, believe it or not. Even though it's got flaws, I didn't play it as much, and so it's got my interest right now. So as far as what has my most interest right now is the Monkey Island 2. It's the one I'm going to go back and play. The Secret of Monkey Island, I kind of got a little bit bored with this time around. Probably because I've done it before. This is one of the problems with graphic point and click adventure games. There's it's kind of on rails, and once you've done it, how many times do you go back and play it?
There's not a lot of replayability once you know all the puzzles and stuff, because it is a linear.
Right.
It's a linear experience that just gets held up with logic puzzles and dialogue, and you can have splitting dialogue trees where, because you made this decision, you may go a whole different way than other players do, but that's usually not enough to come back and play the entire 20-hour experience again, unless you're just feeling nostalgic 20 years later and you're like, well, yeah, I'll play Monkey Island again, but I get you. If it's something still,
it's kind of like watching movies and stuff. You know, it's like, I haven't watched this movie in a while. I think I'll go back to it again.
Yeah, that happens to me every three weeks for Mad Max Fury Road.
You're right. Has it been 3 weeks already?
It has. It's time for a new viewing.
To watch it again.
Yep, I'm doing it too. You watch. My wife has to go out of town this week. This weekend. I'm pretty sure I'm going to watch it Saturday night.
By the way, if you are like, well, I don't care for how the Secret Monkey Island looks, and this also, the special edition came out 20, just like the first one, Secret Monkey Island 1990, and then the special edition 2009. And then Monkey Island 2 came out in 91, and then the special edition came out in 2010. Added the voice acting, even in classic mode, and that might be the reason why this is my favorite, because my favorite way to play it right now is through the special edition, and I love just flipping back and forth, and oh my God, the artwork is just so phenomenal when you flip back.
Oh, it's so good.
There. Especially like the big steals, like where you're like close up of the pirates and stuff, the pixel art. It's so good.
Oh, it's so good. The original stuff is so good. I forgot her name. Is it here somewhere?
Elaine? Marley?
That's her. No. The character. Sorry. The artist who did the 256 color stuff.
I forgot her name. Or the artist or the model for
the artist. Just the artist. I can't find her name. Hold on.
Yeah. There were several on hand who did the stills.
Yeah, but in particular, those stills.
Yeah, they assigned a couple of different illustrators to different areas. So when you would go from one storyline, like the original island you're on the first game is Melee Island, and you're trying to get to Monkey Island. And then the second one, what is it? It's not staff. What is it? What's the second you start at? I can't remember. They're always something weird and gross usually. Anyway, you start on a second island and when part two, and you have to try to get to Monkey Island as well there. But
I can't find her damn name. I'm looking. I saw this earlier. I wanted to give her a shout out. I didn't do it.
Let's see. I'm going to go to Wikipedia, and I'm looking at the artist. We got Steve Purcell, who we know does a lot of stuff. Mark Ferrari, also excellent. Mike Ebert and Martin Cameron. These were the guys and that were as the illustrators.
It was a lady. I swear there's a lady on the first one, but I can't find her name.
Now I know there was Carla, who is the sword, she's the master of swords, and they did artwork of her, and I think she worked in another department or something. Mm-hmm. And I also think that Elaine was also modeled after a different individual.
Elaine
at the place. So yeah, they like to model after people. I especially liked in the first one when they did the loom advertisement.
Oh yeah,
that was pretty funny. Good.
By the way, real quick here, this is some audio from the special edition of 2, so he can hear some of that dialogue here. Check this out.
Well, 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 Guybrush Threepwood, you do turn up in the strangest places.
Hi, Elaine. Do you think you could help me out?
That dude carried on through all of them, but she changed a couple of times.
Yeah, yeah.
Voices, that is, when they had voices. And the new game, she's somebody else, but the dude came back. Guybrush voice.
Yeah, he's everywhere. There's and a lot of the original voice actors came back, with the exception of a few.
Yeah, some she's one of them, and no I can't remember what the some of them passed. That's true.
Is it LeChuck? I think did he retire or something? I think, and he's just.
Yeah, they got a new guy. But that's not hard. You just need someone who yells a lot and is a pirate guy. It's not hard.
Right, right.
You can totally do that. Yeah. I don't know if you knew about this, but early on in 1995, after the success of Toy Story 1, and because Pixar at the time was, I think, still owned by Lucasfilm, they would sell pretty quick after that to Apple. And
Disney.
Wait, Steve Jobs had some hand in this for a bunch of time. What was the deal? Anyway, whatever it is. I forget the way that story went. But anyway, the bottom line is for a while there, they were optioning. The very next thing was going to be not Bug's Life, but a Pixar big screen edition of Monkey Island.
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's been a couple. Yeah, yeah.
That would have been great, dude. I would have been so excited for that. That would have been great.
We're kind of in a tough spot right now because Disney owns LucasArts, which was originally Lucasfilm Games. But Disney has the LucasArts titles, which is – and Monkey Island is based on basically Pirates of the Caribbean, right? And one of the books from the 80s that's unrelated entirely. But anyway, on Stranger Tides.
Yeah.
So it kind of all crosses over. And how does Disney – really move forward with this property, this kind of overlapping its own Pirates of the Caribbean property? It's gotten complicated. Luckily, was able to get this most recent one. They were able to work out a deal with Ron Gilbert to be able to get it back in his hands, at least to make a new game.
Oh, here it is. Okay. So in 1986, newly independent Pixar, which used to be called Pixar with an E, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Was headed by then-president Edward Catmull, executive vice president Al V. Ray Smith. Lucas searched for investors, which led to an offer to sell the thing, and it led to an offer to sell it specifically to Steve Jobs, which initially he turned down, thought it was too low. He eventually accepted the offer after determining it was impossible to find other investors. So Steve Jobs buys it, who is now, at this time, now founder and CEO of the new Next company, NEXT, which
was the brief thing.
So he held on to it until 99 and then sold it to Walt Disney Studios. That's what happened.
Right.
And Disney was already publishing. Disney was like, the public, that they already had an arrangement with Disney. But they didn't own it that whole time. That was just like a later deal.
Is that the one that was supposed to be in 2000, or is that a different one?
Is that
the 2000 movie?
Which one? The
one you're talking about.
The movie? What movie? Did I bring up?
Yeah, the movie they were working on.
Oh, no. This is back right after Toy Story. So like 96 or whatever it was.
Right? Okay.
So, you'd be right because what was it? 98, we got Bug's Life. So it would have been like 98 had they done it.
Right. So that might be it. So
that could have been cool.
I want to look real quick.
I mean, I would have loved that. I'd love to have seen that. This has been very early for like video game translation to film, and I'm not sure how well that would have gone.
But
I would love that.
It would have been a good translation from, because we're about to see in 97, we're about to see The Curse of Monkey Island, which was, that was all the hand-drawn 2D stuff, right? So,
It's pretty cool.
Cool.
Anyway. Yeah, for a lot of people probably don't know about that Steve Jobs connection, but it's a fun read if you go look up some of that stuff. Anyway, now let's jump to 1997, where our world would change quite a bit. It turns out there's a lot of stuff that happened between 91 and 97 in the technology business.
Mm-hmm,
It sounded a little like this. lot more sound going on. This is, of course, Curse of Monkey Island, The Curse of Monkey Island from 1997. Windows, Mac, and Mac OS were the only two places this showed up. This is the totally new team. This is a new and last Scum Engine game that they made. This had full voice acting. It had all kinds of stuff. In particular, here's some from that game.
How many times do I have to tell you, LeChuck, I just don't feel that way about you?
Elaine?
By my congealed blood, you'll learn to love me. Sail with me, and I'll make you queen of the dead.
I can't. I'm washing my hair tonight.
Blast be your hair, woman! Can't you see that this salty old sea corpse pines for your every gentle caress?
How many times do I
have... Whoops, I'm gonna play that again. So there you go. This one, programmed by all new people, voiced by the same cast. But for the most part, this is a whole new team. You know?
Yeah, yeah, new team. It's been like 6 years since the previous, 91 to 97. So we went from, you know, the 3.11... And now we're into the Windows world. We solidly have our Windows 95 machines. We're not having to play games in DOS anymore.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a totally new era, right?
PlayStation 1 year in US anyway. Or I guess that would have been late 96. Yeah. But you know, we're in 32-bit era. We're pushing out of the time we think of, generally speaking, as the retro period anyway. And this game was that for that generation. And I loved the pre-rendered or the pre-animated like intro stuff we're looking at right now.
Real animation, not 3D stuff. Yeah. Real animation.
Loved that stuff. Freaking loved it. I thought that was great. Yeah. This made me think a cartoon should have happened because I would have watched this.
And they also simplified our point and click. Now we're using the full screen for our animation. Mm-hmm. It felt like you're watching something on TV. It felt like you're watching a Saturday morning cartoon. And you had like a choice coin.
Yep.
And so you would click on an object or something, and then you would have the option to pick up, look at, or talk to. Those were your major options there. So it was a lot more pointy clicky. Of course, by this time everybody had a mouse, right? Everybody's got a mouse now.
Oh yeah,
have mices.
There was no lack of mice in that era.
No,
not by 97. So it was it was a big step forward in a lot of ways. The game itself, I only played a chunk of it back in the day.
Yeah.
I didn't play any new this week, so I probably should have. But I don't think this is their best work. I think it's their best looking work. But I think the story and the action and the humor and the gameplay are not as good as previous games. Which just leads me to think that you need, you know, if you're going to get rid of Ron Gilbert, you're making a mistake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I think so too. I think Ron Gilbert liked this one. I've got to say, it almost feels like a totally different game. And it almost was really hard for me to kind of go, because the first two feel like one game. And then this feels like a totally different game. This feels like, Dragon's Lair. It felt different. It felt like a cartoon. It felt like I was playing a cartoon.
Yeah.
First ones did not feel like playing a cartoon.
Which is cool. I don't even think it's a bad thing, but it's different enough that it threw me. Just threw me. Not as bad as Escape, though. We'll get to that in a minute. But Escape really threw me. Because, you know, whatever. That was an awkward stage, man. It's puberty for video games. It was hard.
Yeah.
You know, everything wanted to go 3D, and it just that was rough. But not to jump off Curse too quickly. Full voice acted, lots of sound, obviously. They had almost a full screen inventory pop-up. No more bottom of the screen business.
Yeah, your inventory was a big old chest. I kind of didn't like it because it was good to have the inventory totally out of your view. But the old Grim Fandango.
Look at that. Nice reference.
Yeah, but it was nice for that. But it was also hard to select an item in your inventory and then take it to the edge of the chest and pop back out into the room and then interact with things. It was a little bit clunky in that way.
Yeah,
for me.
This is great.
But everything else, fantastic.
Grim Fandango didn't come out for another year, so this is a fun little preview of what that character would look like.
They were always that was the thing. They would always give nods to their other games, and a lot of times it would be stuff that hasn't even come out yet. All the teams seem to work fairly closely together. A lot of people are probably working on two different games at once, if I had to guess. And this is like I said, this feels totally different to me, but I really like Curse. It was one of my favorites.
Yeah, curse is just not, I don't know why, just didn't work for me.
Yeah.
So
it seems a little more, what would it have been, 1997? How old were you in 97?
I was 27, six.
Right.
Six,
maybe a little too childish for you. Ron Gilbert was already moving on to doing.
I don't think it was childish. I think those games always, I played the newer ones, the Telltale ones, and I liked those more than this one, which is weird because those are generally thought of as not. I just think this one didn't land. I don't know why.
Right.
Just didn't grab me. A few people in the chat are agreeing. They're like, yeah, for whatever reason, this one just didn't do it.
Didn't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know why. For some people, it will, though. Like you. It worked for you.
Yeah. Worked for me.
Yep. Worked for Brian. Might work for you. Now, let's dive into a thing that I don't think should work for anybody. And it's this. This music's all very similar. I decided to capture it all anyway. This is Escape from Monkey Island from 2000. This came out on the PC and PlayStation 2. This is not Scum. It's the Lua engine. Mm-hmm. So we're moving into new territory here. Voodoo 3D support on PCs. Yes. It doesn't run well on Steam right now, by the way. In fact, I don't think it runs at all, right? Yeah. Kind of broken.
It kind of runs, but it crashed a lot. And there was some things I could do. There was a Voodoo control panel tool that I could download. And I started messing with it. And I finally just said, I'm just going to do the PS2 version.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to not shock anybody with this information, but this was a fully 3D game. In a way, the scenes were pre-rendered, most of them.
Right.
And the characters were rendered on top of it in a much simpler fashion. So if you're looking for a comparison, Alone in the Dark is what it reminds me of, or to a lesser degree, like Resident Evil 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it definitely there's definitely one mode that kind of controls like Resident Evil. You can change that as well.
Kind of tank mode if you want to.
Yeah, tank mode, maybe.
Which the console version let you do. This is a game I didn't like then, and I really don't like now. I think it's bad. And I don't think it's bad because they didn't try. I think this was one of those awkward phases that everybody went through with their IPs when they were trying to get to the 3D world, and they were stepping through it with big, clunky hands and didn't quite know what they were doing. And it just felt off to me.
I agree with you because what we were trying to do is use the same game mechanics they were using previously. And it just doesn't work as well because you're pre-rendering 3D graphics. And it's a little bit of disconnect. Like you said, you could feel the growing pains. It was still the parts I got to play. Some of it was kind of entertaining, but trying to get Threepwood to solve some of the puzzles adds a layer of complexity that was removed before. So this game was always notoriously, you know, it was all about story, right? It was an adventure and you didn't have to work too hard for stuff, but this one seemed to be a little bit more difficult, but mostly because of the technology.
I wouldn't even say difficult as much as I say tedious. There's just a lot of travel and stuff you didn't ever have to do before. It's puberty in video games. I'm telling you, the years between 1997 up through about 2002, that's your 3D transition for everything, and it's a hard time across the board with very few exceptions. Once in a while something would jump out, like Mario 64 in many ways transcended it and created a whole new way of looking at it. Other games did way less so. Metal Gear Solid, great example of how to transition to a 3D engine, but these are really rare examples. Most of these guys struggled, bonked their heads, had a rough time. Half-Life was 98, so we're still a year away from that. But anyway,
It's kind of like what we talk about with Nintendo a lot. Nintendo would uses a lot of mature technology. The Scum engine was already pretty well along its way. It had most of the things worked out already before they started on The Secret of Monkey Island. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Lua was still fairly new, and they were trying to figure it out as they went along. Like you said, very awkward stage. I'm with you. It was frustrating.
I admire them for trying. You had to. This is what everyone did, but boof.
Yeah.
It's just a rough outro. Now, I will say, though, the intro stuff is pretty good. Listen to this.
From the personal log of Guybrush Threepwood. Sometimes when it's quiet, I can still hear the monkeys. It's hard to believe that it's only been a few years since I first washed up on the beaches of Melee Island, armed with nothing more than a goofy name and an overpowering urge to become a swashbuckling pirate. I want to be a pirate. Who could have suspected that such a humble pursuit would lead me to cross swords with the evil ghost pirate LeChuck, the slimiest slug ever to plunder the seven seas?
It's good. It's lighthearted and fun. It's a fun intro. But
and you can start later. On any of the Monkey Island games we talked about today. You can start at any one of those, and you'll get all the backstory up front that you'll need. You won't have to worry about feeling lost. Yeah, you can start anywhere.
No, I'm counting. That's what I'm counting on with this new one. When I fire it up later this week, it's going to be like, oh, here we go. I'm going to play the game that, and they're going to tell me everything that came before, and that's fine. That's how I'll play it.
Yeah. It's supposed to sit after Monkey Island 2, but not necessarily a sequel, but they also are going to include everything that happened along the way. You know, not, they're not going to try not to include it. How about that? There's supposed to be things that are they're not going to like wipe a whole thing out. If they need to approach it, they'll go, yeah, it happened. It existed in any of the iterations of this. And here it is. It's fine.
Yeah, it's good enough.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. The word fine is a perfect definition of this.
It's fine. It's not it's double fine. Fine.
Yeah. Hey, no, it's not double fine. I see what you did. You know, we mentioned Maniac Mansion. Of course, this game doesn't exist without it. That's the origin of all things.
That's where the scum comes from. The MM in scum is for Maniac Mansion.
Yeah, which is a pretty big legacy kind of thing to have your name right there. Maniac Mansion, I played on the NES, I think, is where I did it. It was pretty ahead of its time. Pretty ugly now, but one hell of a thing at the time.
Yeah, it did what it had to do.
I also really liked Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade graphic adventure, which Ron Gilbert also worked on. This would have been in between a couple of these, I think.
Now, these were all true 16-bit to the core games, you know, that 16-color, EGA color palette,
Yeah, this one, I mean, the Last Crusade was still pretty ugly, because that was like 90, I think,
right.
90, 91.
This must have been more than that. Yeah, this is 90, yeah.
Yeah, there's another one, later in Indiana Jones LucasArts game that was a little bit like bigger characters and like larger painted sprites and stuff, that was like its own adventure. It wasn't based on the movies, I don't think. That was also really good. I mentioned Deathspank. If you don't remember Deathspank, I'll give you a little video taste of it here. It was basically, conceptually, it was like, hey, what if we made a Diablo kind of game, but let's just fill it with tons of humor.
Yeah, and it was hilarious. I love this game so much.
The humor landed for a lot of it for me and missed for a lot of it for me. It's hard for me to explain. It's a real mixed bag. Overall, I really enjoyed it. This was a game that I remember when we were doing Final Score, and Nicole would not stop talking about this game. It was like her favorite thing.
She loved this game, but I did too. But I couldn't love it as much as her, because she already had that job filled.
Yeah, she did that just fine. And then my favorite of the Ron Gilbert more modern takes, I mentioned a bunch of times already, and that's Thimbleweed Park. This is an amazing game. It's set in the 80s. It is very much like a throwback to where that dude was back then and what he was making. The humor is there. The sort of tradition of Monkey Island is there. I'll say it again. Please play Thimbleweed Park, everybody. If you haven't, you can get it real cheap on Steam. It's a fantastic game. As good
as
they get.
Buy it full price so Ron Gilbert can make more video games.
That's right. What are you doing, you slacker asses? Okay. we're going to leave that behind for now. And also, next week I should be able to give you some impressions of the new game, because I am going to play it. And
Are you guys going to talk about it? I know it was John or Bo playing it, I believe, as well.
John definitely played it. He played it and beat it, and he wouldn't shut up about it. He freaking loved it. So
you already talked about that on Core this week?
Yeah, because he bought it last Tuesday and beat it by Thursday.
Excellent.
And I said, wow, is it short? And he goes, no, it was like 12 hours, and I just, you know, just played all day.
No, I'm just a loser.
Yeah. He's like, I just played all day on a Saturday and beat it.
Yeah.
That's how much he liked it. That's all I need to know, because John's a huge fan of the Monkey Island series. So anyway, awesome. Watch for that. That'll be, was it last Monday he bought it? Oh, I thought it was Tuesday. Anyway, that's still pretty fast, dude. By Core on Thursday, he had beaten that game. And I thought, oh no, does that mean it's short? Like, I was worried.
Yeah,
Because the price isn't budget.
Like 24.
But yeah, it's $24. That's cheap. Cheaper than I expected it to be, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it'd be 40. I don't know.
I know, because I'm not sure how all that works, because we know that he doesn't actually own the rights to it. So he's got worked out some kind of deal with Disney.
Yeah.
So I don't know if any of that money's going to Disney, how much, or, you know, or or what all the deals were that was made, but I wish him success, and I hope this is another chapter in the Monkey Island
series.
Oh,
I hope so, too. It sounds like he's really brought an end to it from what I've heard.
Yeah.
But I don't think that means that you can't do more.
Yeah.
Especially because you said it. It's like after two, right? So it's kind of a prequel right. in a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the movies... It's such a weird feed because the Monkey Island itself was, of course, it kind of nods heavily that it was, you know, it was either taken place in an amusement park. This game always breaks the fourth wall, you know, and so all that stuff is based on the Pirates of the Caribbean. And, you know, I don't think they did much of the On Stranger Tides kind of idea of, you know, zombies, voodoo, ghost kind of stuff until later on in the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, which came much later. So it's like there's feeding back and forth inspiration from the LucasArts to Disney all the way to here. So,
and you know what I would say about a lot of people didn't like the new art style. They're wrong. Yeah. It's rad. It's really good.
Yeah. It's what would you call it? I like it, but
I love it. I think it's great.
It reminds me of the Don't Starve kind of, not the actual in-game, but like the cutscenes and things.
Yeah, I could see that a little bit. Yeah. Sure. To me, it just looks like this is how far we've come, and it feels just like the right direction. I don't know.
Right.
A lot of people had a problem with it. I have zero problem with it. To me, it was like seeing Wind Waker for the first time, and I was the only person on the internet that wasn't losing their mind. And I was like, yeah, this looks actually really good. I'm ready for this game. And everyone's like, I can't believe it looks like a cartoon. Brr.
Give it to me.
And then we loved it. So take that, you jackasses. all right. Well, we've done it. But now we do this.
Destroy it.
Brian, it's time for us to play Guess My Game. We both have audio. We play a little bit of it.
Yes.
We give some hints. And then we try to guess what each other brought to the table. I'm going to start as usual. And you're going to have to guess based on the following hints. Those hints are this. NES is the device.
Nintendo Entertainment System.
Correct.
Okay.
And it is 1990. Since we're in the 90s here, I figured we'd stay right there at 1990.
We're in the same year as The Secret of Monkey Island. Okay, I am prepped.
All right, let's see if you can figure it out as I remember to put this in here because I forgot to. Okay, here we go.
Definitely Choplifter.
No, what'd you call it?
Definitely Choplifter.
Yeah, totally Choplifter. Let's get into some action here. Any guesses?
Sounds kind of familiar, but it's not ringing any bells immediately, but it definitely feels...
This is considered one of the great gems of that hardware.
Right.
But not a lot of people have heard of it. So I went with something that
this
I think a lot of people
later in NES life, right? So, I mean, it's...
Yeah, it would have been a few years in, sure. Look at, it's intense now. Oh, it's very intense.
Everything sounds like circus music. Is there a circus involved?
There's not. You're right. It does sound circusy. There's not. All right, I'll tell you because you're never going to get it.
It does sound familiar, though.
I'll give you another hint. SNK made it. Does that help you at all?
Not at all. Okay. Give me the answer.
Well, the answer is Crystalis, rather, not Crystalis.
Oh, Crystalis. Okay. I didn't really play this much, but I have seen it before. I've watched some videos on it.
Yeah, it's good.
That's part of the reason why.
I remember loving this game, and it was like top-down action RPG, Zelda-ish in that way, I guess.
Right.
But this was like... I don't know. To me, it was like a more realistic take, or that's hard to do on an NES. Like nothing's realistic, but
yes.
Just felt like a more adult sort of take on the concepts that are in Zelda at the time.
Yeah.
And I would have been, I don't know, I was like 19 or something. So I was just, you know, old enough to like it, I think, for it being a little less kiddie. I don't know. It's hard to explain, but I thought it was great. Top-down action RPG is the best way I could describe it, which is, you know, a lot like Zelda. So there you go.
Yeah. I've watched some video on this. I'd consider playing this. So that's probably the reason why it sounded familiar, but not enough for me to remember.
Do you think it's Crystalis or Chrysalis? Because I always said Crystalis. C-R-Y-S-T-A-L-I-S.
That's a good question. I don't... Crystalis.
Chris, that's what it sounds like. That's what I said then. I'm sticking with it now.
Chris Tallis. That's what I'm thinking.
Christopher Tallis. Nailed it.
Christopher Tallis.
Yep, we got it. No question there. All right. Brian, I'm going to play yours. Let's see what we get. Whoops, I got to turn mine off. There we go. Turn off. Okay.
Guess what I did this week?
What?
I wrote down the game.
Oh, you did? So you know what this is before I play it? No way.
So I'm on it, baby.
I'm really excited to hear you remember your game. All right, here it is. I'll play it. Oh, it looks like you got a year of 1994.
And, 1994, a few years after. Like, this is the lull in between the Monkey Island games. So you had to play something, and it couldn't be a Monkey Island game. So what was it?
Okay, and this was, let's see, DOS and Mac. So let's see what we got here.
Do you believe in magic? Is magic only an illusion created by a stage magician? Well, there's an old saying, seeing is believing.
Austin McIntosh.
Yeah.
From this thing to 3.11.
Believed in magic, but her older brother Alex didn't. She loved visiting her great uncle Josh because he lived right across the street from Orpheus Palace, one of the last great vaudeville theaters.
Okay, you got me to come over here with you. Now what?
Well, we try to get inside, dummy.
Get inside?
Are you crazy? Oh. It's almost 8 o'clock. Uncle Josh will be back from his meeting in an hour. He'll freak if we're gone.
Well, I'm not afraid.
What do you mean? I'm not afraid either. It's just
I'm going. Are you coming or not?
Wait. Terry! I can't believe I let you talk me into this. Uncle Josh said they closed.
Okay, that's where it ends.
Adventure game, horror game.
Horror game, okay.
People said it was described as a Myst clone with Myst-like graphics. Oh.
Seventh guest.
Oh, that's a good guess, but that would be incorrect.
Okay, hold on. Myst-like graphics. Obviously, voiceover. Terry and Junior Butthole out doing adventures.
Right.
Let's see.
And they said part of the title in the game. Not the main title, but it is the like subtitle. The location. I'm surprised the chat room has no clue. I thought you guys were all younger.
I mean, I don't know. Let's see. I honestly don't know.
if you were 13 in if you were around 13 or 14 or so in the 90s, you'd probably Claire's a little bit too young, but you would probably have watched some of this on Nickelodeon.
Nickelodeon. Goosebumps.
Oh, that's a good guess, which there's some good Goosebump games, but that's not it.
Oh, shit.
And it's definitely Hydropanics is Doug. It's not Doug.
It's not Doug.
And it's not Rugrats.
It's a shame. It's not Rugrats. It's not the guy with the twisty mustache and the kids. What's that called? What was that called?
Twisty mustache and the kids.
Yeah, the artist. It was the same artist, I think, or creator of Real Monsters.
Real Monsters?
Yeah, but the... I can't remember the name of it. He had a twisty mustache. He's kind of a meme now. They put his head on people.
Right, right.
Shit.
I'll give you another hint.
Yeah.
Some of the people in the chat room that are younger finally came online.
Well, it's not Hey Arnold. Is it Doug?
Hey Arnold! I already said it wasn't Doug.
Oh, is it Hey Arnold? Is it?
No. Oh. No, I just like saying Hey Arnold.
Okay. The Adventures of Pete and Pete? I don't know who that is.
No, you never seen The Adventures of Pete and Pete. God, I love The Adventures of Pete.
No, I don't know that one. I know Cat Dog.
Yeah, so good.
Cat Dog's cool.
Cat Dog.
Yeah, and then what's the one with the cows? Cow and Chicken. I like that.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. I don't know. What's the name of the damn thing?
Surrender?
Yes. Yeah,
Are
Surrender.
You afraid of the dark?
Oh,
let's gather around the campfire and tell stories. It's the tale of Orfeo's curse.
Was it good?
It was pretty good. It wasn't like the best game ever, but I mean, if you were sick of playing Myst.
Yeah. Someone in the chat called it Pyst. That's amazing. Pyst.
I love it. Yeah. So It was a DOS game. I had Windows 95. Like I said, I got a lot of crap games.
Yeah, let's see. You did have a lot of crap games. So,
yeah. But this was a Tech Toy Jam. You remember those guys?
I do remember them. Yeah, lots of
toy and electronics company.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I totally remember
that. A lot of Sega Genesis stuff.
Afraid of the Dark, Tale of Orpheus Curse, Ghostly Adventure Game, 94, DOS, Brazil, United States, France, Germany. Let's see. So it was point and clicky. Yeah. Viacom New Media had a hand in it. First person perspective. So yeah, there'd be your missed aspect. I don't remember this
getting
at
ready
all.
For spooky season, and I was looking through retro scary games, and I was like, that won't be too easy. Scott will know that one. Scott will know that one. And I was like, oh, look at this. I haven't seen this in forever.
Oh, it's so, like a bunch of FMV as well. Yeah.
Yeah. A little full motion video kind of stuff.
Don't like it.
In the cutscenes.
Yeah. Not a fan. But you got me there. You've stumped me officially. Well done.
Yeah. Well, we stumped each other. It was a sound stumping today.
It was a mutual stumping is what we did.
Yes.
Now this.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Hey, y'all. It's time for emails. Got two of them. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com is the email address. Robert Blank wrote in.
Robert Blank.
That's a cool name. Sounds like he needs to do detective novels or something. Adventures of Robert Blank. Hey, Scott, you asked why they didn't do Batman 89 games for Genesis, but I wanted to tell you that Batman 89 is very well represented on that system. Technically, it was the Mega Drive in Japan and something that prevented a U.S. release. I don't remember what the issue was, but I think it had something to do with licensing. It almost always does.
Always is.
Be that as it may, I was very upset when I read that it wouldn't come out in the U.S. Thankfully, I found a video game shop that sold Japanese imports, and they had it available. I had to pay through the nose to get it, but that game became one of my favorites to ever play on the Genesis. I think it eventually saw a U.S. release years later. I'm not sure about that, says Robert. Robert, the only question I would have is, did you have to sit through Japanese stuff, or was there subtitles, or how did that work?
I don't think it was very much like there was just the little movie. There wasn't a lot of text or anything. So I would say probably not much had changed. I don't remember there being very much English in it, period. No language much at all. And most of it was just like the Batmobile showing up. Mm. Was it Sunsoft maybe had like a lockdown on any?
Probably.
It was probably a lockdown on certain.
Yeah, they wanted to have region. Because back in the day, it was all region locked everywhere. So you would have some companies who would get the licensing in one region, and they would make all the money in that region, and then you'd never cross paths with another region. That's not true anymore, or mostly anymore, because everything's region free. But, you know, you got to remember, this is an era where this damn thing was called a Genesis here and a Mega Drive in Europe. And I think Japan also Mega Drive, right? I don't remember.
And it wasn't uncalled for like people like Nintendo to go, we want the license to this. And then they don't even publish anything, and they just like screw everybody else over.
Yeah.
Just because they're, you know, Nintendo.
Could be. But also, you know, they were also weird with their names. They were the Famicom over there and the NES here. Like, it's just weird. Weird time.
I bet they would say the weirdly weird ones, since they had the Famicom first. They went the Nintendo Entertainment System?
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yep. NES, baby. Everybody was trying to match cultures or something. I don't know what was going on back then. Mm-hmm. But, Rob also wrote in, says, hey, Scott and Brian, I saw Horizon Chase Turbo is on sale today for $4 on Steam, and I thought I would pass the word along to you guys for the show. I picked this game up today after hearing you talk about it and after confirming my Steam Deck last week. Keep up the retro, guys. Rob. Rob's also in our chat today. That game's amazing, and the sale is too good to pass up. I found out why they did it, though. There's a brand new Horizon Chase Turbo 2 that just hit Apple Arcade first. It's coming to everything else, too, but it started there.
My dog.
And it's good. It's very good. I played it on Apple Arcade. It's quality awesome. I played it on my my Backbone, which is a pretty fun way to play that. And I want it on Steam. It's not there yet, but that explains the kind of sale they're having right now, because they've, you know, the first game is great and had a recent update and all sorts of new modes added. It's totally worth playing. If you haven't tried Horizon Chase, then you are dumb and should play it. So play it.
Hey now.
You're only dumb until you get it, and then you get it, and then you're not
right.
Dumb.
Yeah, if you like Outrun, then you're probably gonna like that Horizon Chase Turbo.
Oh yeah, that thing's got Outrun in its veins, man.
Yeah, we had a Robert and a Rob today. Nice.
Yeah, Rob and Robert. Rob and Robert. Nicely done, guys. Hey, guess what's going on next week, everybody? This is exciting. I'm excited about this. I know you are as well. trackballs, arcade trackball games, not just the balls. We'll talk about those and the tech itself, but things like Centipede, Marble Madness, Missile Command, Crystal Castles, and so much more.
Yes.
Millipede.
Millipede, not to be confused with Centipede.
Uh-huh. It was a weird run there where balls were everything for a while.
Yeah. And, it's like it's balls everywhere. I want to spin the ball.
Yep. So we're going to talk about them. How can you get them today? What do they work with today? Got all kinds of suggestions on that front. But also, why were these games so cool? And why are they so hard to play on anything else but a trackball?
Yeah.
We'll get into it. Missile Command without a trackball is a garbage video game. With a trackball, it's one of the greatest things ever made. So, right. You know, control is everything. They also got really dirty. My dad owned arcades then. I'll have some stories about that. And why these arcade things would track or would attract everybody's hand goo all day long.
Yeah.
It was bad. It was bad. We had to clean them all the time. It sucked. Anyway.
I love to spin them, though, even if I wasn't playing.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a free spin on my trackball over here.
Yeah. Sometimes I'd walk into the arcade and just walk past one and just go, and then walk.
Or just sometimes, every time I walk by.
That's what you're supposed to do.
It's what you're supposed to do, man.
That's right. I have a horrible booger story that my friend caused. Yeah. I'll tell that story then. It's real bad. Also, a couple of gum stories. But trackballs, arcade games that use them and why they were a very unique part of the history of retro gaming. That's next week on Play Retro. Real quick then. Oh, and after that, we're doing like Alone in the Dark.
Oh. Yeah, it's time for spooky season. So we need to get a couple of spooky games in for Play Retro. We like to play.
Yeah.
Those scary games.
Why not? There's talk of a complete remake of Alone in the Dark just got announced last week.
Yes, there is. Anyway. Might be the reason why I picked that one.
Mm. Oh, well, good. Anyway, trackballs next week. We get into the Halloween business the next week. It'll all be great. In the meantime, please join us at our Patreon at patreon.com/playretro. Why, you ask? Well, the answer is simple. It's a great way for us to maintain this thing and keep the lights on, but also it's a great way for you to support your favorite show and your favorite creators, like these people, Daniel, who just joined us, and somebody Mailman, who's decided to go kind of across all the Frog Pants stuff and become a patron everywhere. I don't know who that is, but I love him. Mailman, you're awesome. Yeah.
But now he's not like double like M-A-L-E man, right? Or is he like the postman?
He's like the postman. He's like Carl Malone. He's taking the ball to the hoop. That's what he's doing.
Yes.
Maybe Carl Malone is actually supporting the shows. I don't know.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I doubt it. But hey, I'm from Utah. Could be. A jazz fan from back in the day when you could have won a ring, you bastards. Anyway. that'll be real easy for you to hop onto patreon.com/playretroshow. Never get commercials, pre-show content, every single episode, monthly benefits you can only get by going over there. So sign up today if you haven't already. playretroshow@gmail.com is our email address, and the website is frogpants.com/playretro. Hey, Brian, do you have anything to add before we go today?
Daily, I stream these games most every day, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, twitch.tv/Brian Dunaway. Scott, you fight like a cow.
Oh, well, good, because that's what my mama trained me to do. That'll do it for us. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next time. Go play something retro, and we'll see you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com. It's up to you to find out what's what.
Yeah.
What's what, Scott?
What's what?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
Kyler Tsinis. I'm Kyler Tsinis, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.